Craig Peltzer, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
And now, what do you think? How will the government's carbon pricing scheme affect the economies of Canada's three northern territories?
That's a great question. And the answer right now is simply we don't know. And many of the details of the Prime Minister's announcement around carbon taxing or carbon pricing, we won't know that until probably in December. But if it's a cookie-cutter approach, it could have very negative consequences for the three northern economies, but it's unlikely to be a cookie-cutter approach. And when we look at other jurisdictions like Norway, they certainly haven't taken a cookie-cutter approach when dealing with various industries, for example.
Now, let's talk about the approaches. How likely is that these northern territories, Nunavut, Northwest Territories, and Yukon will get some kind of an exemption from the this carbon scheme?
They almost have to, and certainly over the phase-in period, over 5 years. If you take, for example, Nunavut, all communities are on diesel. There are no communities, there's no that are connected to a grid that's powered by hydroelectricity or some other form of green energy. So and the other big factor, of course, in addition to power, is transportation. And again, if you look at whether it's Old Crow in the Yukon or other communities, many communities in the Northwest Territories, in all communities in Nunavut, the only access really is by air, and so or boats in the summer. So there's going to have to be some accommodation just because of those realities. Southern Canada has benefited for decades, even more than 100 years, from rail transport and other efficient transportation, and of course the big advantage of high density populations. So Southern Canada is in a big advantage. So those kind of accommodations are going to have to be made in Northern Canada.
Now, you talked about some of these specific approaches that other Arctic countries have taken to this kind of issues. Can you give me examples of how other Arctic countries who are worried about climate change are approaching this issue?
Absolutely. And we think of two northern countries that have similar economies to Canada, heavily based on natural resources. Two stand out are Norway and Sweden. And Norway has imposed back in the 1990s, and the same thing with Sweden as early as 1991, putting a carbon tax on fuel consumption prices, particularly around industry. So if we look at the oil sector, in Norway, for instance, the carbon pricing is over $70 a ton. And if we look at what's being proposed by Prime Minister Trudeau, that's more than double. So that's already existing. And in Sweden, it's even more aggressive. Their carbon pricing is at about $140 a ton. And it has had a real impact on CO2 emissions. So if we look at Norway, for example, one of the things that they're likely to implement is electrification of most of the energy that's used in oil production. And you look at a lot of Canada, by contrast, we still use a lot of fossil fuels to extract fossil fuels. So those kind of carbon pricing approaches do have an impact on the economy. But then again, if you look at Norway, industries that could afford it, and in their case, their offshore oil industry could afford the carbon pricing. They have a higher and a more aggressive standard. But if you look at other sectors, some of their mining sectors, that for cement, concrete, things like that, Norway actually has a lower carbon price, because if they outprice carbon on some of those industries simply wouldn't exist. And of course, they're necessary for everything from road construction domestically to building construction. So that's where governments are going to have to be smart, and Canada, too, will have to be smart in its carbon pricing approaches.
Now, there are various ways of pricing carbon. One is the having a levy or a tax, whatever you call it, on a certain number of tons of carbon produced. The other one is a more indirect cap and trade system. Do you know which of these systems would work better for Canada's North?
That's a million-dollar question and a great question. And the devil is in the details. So you're absolutely right. There's two basic forms, the direct carbon pricing or cap and trade, which sets actual real emission output limitations and then reduces those over time. And, of course, some industries are going to end up exceeding those limits on CO2 emissions. And other ones are going to be able to innovate, and because they have an economic or an industrial advantage, just because of the nature of the business, can reduce CO2 emissions. So what ends up happening is you have an internal market in which those that have a surplus of CO2 credits can auction those off, and then there's an actual market, a bidding price on CO2 emission credits that companies that are over the limit can purchase to offset the emissions that the extra emissions that they're creating. But there's always the devil's in the detail. So it depends what level carbon taxing prices are set at. Are there going to be differences among sectors? Are there going to be differences on domestic consumption as opposed to industrial consumption? And the same thing applies equally in the cap and trade. What are the are there exemptions for some industries or not? How are they going to be phased in? And that can make all the difference. So there's no one right answer to cap and trade versus carbon taxing. And that's what the Prime Minister has signaled, that territories and provinces have that opportunity to come up with schemes or plans that might best fit the reality of their region.
Mm-hmm. Now, in all of this debate that is still raging on in the Parliament and, of course, in the media, is there an issue that is not being raised that you think needs to be raised?
Well, there's a couple of things, and one is there's good old-fashioned territorial and provincial versus federal government politics in play, and that's part of the dynamic here that's completely independent of the issue of carbon pricing in and of itself. But there's another issue that I think Canadians need to be paying very close attention to, and that's our global markets. So if we look at over the last decade, certainly during the Harper Prime Minister's period, unable to get a pipeline approved, and certainly not one to the United States. And so you can understand both perspectives. On Prime Minister's side, he's got to demonstrate to the international community that Canada is going to do something very concrete about reducing CO2 emissions. If he doesn't, we're going to be faced with a situation that we're going to have difficulty getting pipelines built, particularly to the United States, and we're going to have difficulty getting our natural resources out to market because people will, other countries will say, you're not doing anything about climate change. So that's a real concern economically for the Prime Minister. And internally in Canada, you can understand territorial premiers and some provincial premiers worried about what is the domestically going to be the impact for their economies, everything from agriculture in Saskatchewan to our provincial and territorial north, where there's oil and gas production as well as mining. And so those economic interests domestically and internationally are very much at play in all this equation. So, yes, we got to do something about the climate, but we have to be very smart and be cognizant that we are in a global trading environment.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, for example, how our neighbors to northwest in Alaska are dealing with these issues?
Absolutely. Here's one of the fascinating things about Alaska. Alaska is probably 20 years ahead of Canada in the adoption of renewable energy resources. And they have some over 200 communities that are islanded or not connected to any main grid. There is a grid between Fairbanks and Anchorage. But one of the reasons why they've adopted so much renewable energy is because it's one of the least energy subsidized jurisdictions in the entire world. So it is very expensive, of course, to fly in or to barge in a diesel. And so it becomes very cost effective to have either wind where there's good wind resource or solar, geothermal, biomass options in terms of energy production. And that's why Alaska has, over the last 20 years, been actually a leader in the world, let alone the North, in terms of the adoption of renewable energy resources.